weekend. Good afternoon and welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News. Joy News, independent, fearless and credible. And this afternoon, we have a show for you. So coming up this afternoon, residents of Tema New Town intensifies call for punishment of persons involved in the killing of two residents as they point accusing fingers at the Ghana Navy for their alleged involvement. Also, antiretroviral drugs said to be part of medical supplies from Global Fund cannot be found after the health ministry cleared 14 out of the 182 containers kept at the Tema port for over a year. But the HIV group insists there are supposed to be 11 containers of HIV drugs there. So the question is, where are the containers? And later, our big conversation today, how do our MPs cope with the excessive pressures they face in office and life of the parliament? We have conversation with some sitting and former MPs. The process is brought to you by Global Communities Digilu, affordable, safe, sanitation for all. We are live on DSTV channel 421, GoTV 125. Follow us on Facebook, YouTube, and myjoyonline.com for these and more. My name is Elton Robbie. We are back with your most authoritative afternoon show on television. And this afternoon, we are spending time in Parliament for those who are in Parliament, those who are leaving, and those who are about to enter. Ghana's House of Parliament will, in January 2025, see the exit of some senior members of Parliament. The MPP, MPs, for example, will not join the next Parliament, include the Majority Leader, a Member of Parliament for Swami, or say Chairman Sabonzo, who has served in the House for 7 terms. Deputy Speaker of Parliament as First Deputy Speaker, a Member of Parliament for Bekwai, Joseph Osewusu, 4 terms, Kennedy Japon, Asin Central, 6 terms, Joe Gatti, Esikado Ketan, 5 terms, Samuel Atacha, Abubakar South, and of course, Dan Boche from Okere, among others. The truth is that the MPs are under so much pressure from their constituents and Ghanaians at large. By the time they leave office, they are worn out due to the amount of pressure on them. Some resort to taking pills to steady their nerves, while others are left in financial difficulties. And we have been looking at the figures. I mean, how much you need, for example, before you can enter Parliament. And between 2012 and 2016, the cost of running for political office increased by 59%. On the average, candidates require between $100,000 and $200,000, which translates to about 2 million Ghana cedis before that person can enter Parliament. And that, you know, presents a very, you know, serious matter if you want to look at it from the standpoint of the financial implications required before you can have a seat in Parliament. And of course, you need this money before you can secure the nomination of your party and then compete in parliamentary election in your constituency. And this is according to a survey by the Center for Democratic Development. Now, if the cost of politics rises to unaffordable levels, the danger is that politics becomes domain of the elites and wealthy, and that the motivation and incentives of MPs move from serving the public to recovering their own investment. So why serve your people and then are poor in what many have described as a thankless job? That is our conversation this afternoon here on The Pulse with me, Elton Brobe. So this is what we have put together for you now. Breakdown, of course, 2 million Ghana cedis, sometimes dedicated towards nurturing constituencies. There's another 2 million Ghana cedis, sometimes that is spent after recurring candidature, after securing your candidature position, and plus other, you know, expenditure that comes with it. And this afternoon, we are privileged to have some members of parliament. They've served in the house. They are leaving the house. Some have been declared that will no longer be serving in any public service. The reason we'll get to understand it better. And of course, some who are still serving and some that have won their parliamentary primaries, waiting for the elections in December and then to take their seat in parliament, to be a member of parliament in the 9th parliament from January 5, 2025. So what are the stakes and what is the way forward on this? Let me start with the First Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Right Honorable Speaker Joseph Osewusu, who is also the Member of Parliament for Bekwai. And after 7 terms in Parliament, he's calling it a day. Honorable Joseph Osewu, you're welcome to the pulse. Honorable, if you can kindly unmute for me so we can hear you. We don't appear to have Honorable Joseph Osewu, who is joining us via Zoom. We'll try and reestablish contact with him so we can, start the ball rolling on this very important conversation about our MPs and the financial implications on them. Let me try again if I can get his attention. Honorable Joseph Osewu, who is first Deputy Speaker of Parliament. If you can hear me, you're welcome to the program. So the point is that between 2012 and 2016, the cost of running for political office increased by 59%. I gave you that figures early on. And according to the Center for Democratic Development, you require between $100,000 and $200,000, which translates over 2 million Ghana cedis, to secure party's primary nomination and then compete in a parliamentary election in the constituency that you are competing. And the fact is that if the cost of politics rises to unaffordable levels, the danger is that politics now becomes the domain of the elite and wealthy, and that the motivation and incentive of MPs move from serving the public to recovering their own investment. So why serve your people and end up poor in what many have described as a thankless job? So this afternoon, we'll be exploring this matter with the first Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Joseph Osewusu, and also the former MP, David Apasara, will also be joining us. Will be joining us in studio. We'll also be joined by Nkuranza North, former Deputy Defense Minister, and of course, Southton MP, who is more likely than to end up in Parliament in the next session. And before our conversation, this is a report put together by my colleague, Zuleha Nuhu.
Mr. Speaker, at the time, Professor Michael Kwee, as chair of the board, needed to help a former MP with 12,000 Ghana cedis. And this MP was requesting to do a surgery, prostate surgery. I want to keep the name because...
It's a typical day in Parliament, where members of Parliament passionately debate matters concerning their constituents. However, today's focus shifts inward as concerns about the health of MPs take centre stage. Tamale South MP and former minority leader Haruna Idrisu had raised concerns on the floor of the House about the quality of health of former members of Parliament and incumbent members of Parliament. Outside the parliamentary chamber, MPs reflect on the toll their work takes on their well-being. Nshayesu MP Stephen Amoa means no words as he said the work is stressful.
Honestly speaking, I think the word stress is even an understatement. It's extremely stressful, extremely, very, very stressful. And it's stressful because of what it entails. The work is extremely cumbersome because you need to work here. You need to attend to your constituents and then even Ghana at large. And now they are shifting almost everything about the country to MP. So I think even it's moved beyond the core functions of a parliamentarian. If somebody has any issue, being social, being developmental, being economical, being financial, they call the MP. So it's getting too tedious.
Busiga MP Ladi Ayamba highlighted that the health and financial stability of MPs are significantly impacted by their responsibilities.
Very, very, very stressful. Very stressful. We have personal issues. We have community issues. We have religious issues. We have constituency at large issues. You have people who will come to you about ill health. And they come to you with all sincerity that you have to help them. You have nowhere to turn to, nobody to give you. The unfortunate thing and the painful aspect is that people rather tend to always be talking about common fund, MPs common fund. This thing is supposed to be to come quarterly. So people come about health. People come about education. That is school fees. Others come about even marriage. Person wants to marry and comes to you as an MP that you should help or support that person, him or her, to marry. Both men and women, or boys and girls, they do.
Boliban Boy MP Yusif Sulemana echoed the same sentiments, indicating that the overwhelming responsibilities of MPs have a profound effect on their health. Executive Director of ASEPA, Dr. Rashid Rahman, says government's intervention is necessary to address the health challenges faced by incumbent and former MPs.
I mean, if you ask them as human beings, apart from being about, first of all, the pension or whatever end of service benefits that they should be entitled to, if we take away that business of, I mean, collateralizing their pension against the vehicles that they use for their official work, I think that would be a big first step. I think the second one, and this is my advice to former MPs, you know, in this country, once an MP or once a politician, people always want to live at that level of lifestyle. If you are a teacher and you go into parliament, tomorrow when you leave parliament, you should go back and do your teaching job. I mean, you have a profession. But most of them, once they leave parliament, they want to live the life of a politician. Apart from the fact that maybe financially they will be better off, I think even your state of mind, when you sit at home and you are not doing anything, it affects your health significantly.
So this afternoon we are exploring this with the first Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Joseph Osewusu, who is also the member of Parliament for Bekwa in the Ashanti region. He will not be in the ninth Parliament, but in the studio this afternoon is former MP David Apasara, former member of Parliament for Bolga Tanga in the Upper East region. Will also be joined by some former MPs and some sitting MPs, including the South Town MP, Roxin Nelson Dafia Mekpo, and then others, as we look to find solution to this very issue. Former MP for Bolga Tanga, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Mr. Apasara.
Thank you.
So the question is it really a thankless job as a member of Parliament?
Certainly, it's a thankless job.
Explain further.
In fact, former member of parliament. The moment you leave parliament, it looks like you are good riddance. Nobody wants to have anything to do with you. Mm. I was just listening to the man who was intimating that after leaving parliament, you should go back to your profession.
I mean, the profession you were on before you became a member of parliament.
Mm-hmm. I know former members who have tried to go back to the teaching field, and it is very difficult. There is one person who was a Liberian. After leaving parliament, he wanted to go back and work in the Ghana Library Board. It was a problem.
Why?
We can't tell, but it looks like once you are up to some level, you cannot. People don't want to associate so closely.
Is it a case that you don't want the job, or people just don't want to?
Yes, because you want the job.
But this is
somebody who applied to go back and do his work at the library. Mm-hmm. And then he was not given that. He was frustrated. A whole lot of former members, if you ask them, they'll tell you.
So it's difficult to get back to normal life after serving as an MP.
Yes.
For example, if I was a teacher and I'm out of parliament, I want to go back to the GES.
Yes.
The GES makes it difficult for me to get recruitment.
It is not GES as by way of policy, but the individuals who are there, who you are going to work with or going to work under, would definitely not want to have you, and so you would keep on getting frustrated. Now, the other thing about it is that you are not entitled to pension.
Everything is consolidated in your salary. Is that not the case?
No. What happens is that when you become an MP, you have a whole lot of issues to handle with your salary. Mm-hmm. You have nothing more than your salary. And so if your constituent has an adoring, you are invited. Mm-hmm. Your constituent has a funeral, you are invited. Your constituent is in the hospital, sick, you are invited. Whatever is the problem with your constituent, and you can imagine that you have a big constituency, and you have visitors coming to you. All is on your salary. And then you come out of that. How much can you save? You can't save anything.
So therefore, it is more like a weekly cycle of expenditure. A
weekly cycle of expenditure from only your salary and nothing else. And then when you finish and you come out, the ex gratia that you're going to get, if you so decide that you are getting out of parliament, mm-hmm. then that is fine. But if you decide that you're going to run again, what you have is just your ex gratia. By then it might not have been paid, so you go to the bank and take a kind of a loan against your ex gratia. Then you go and spend it to be able to get elected. Just like you were saying, it is about 2 million now
right.
to get to parliament. Now, if you are an MP and you are in parliament, you have all your constituencies, constituents around you, and you are to spend the money, you have no money, it's all your things. So you are saving nothing. Now, if you are to come back, if you don't have money to campaign, nobody is going to bring you. So you will have to go and hedge this your ex gratia or whatever for a loan. And then you go and spend it there. Then you come back. This is the cycle.
And sometimes, to my understanding, is that even with the ex gratia, is that same ex gratia that the car loan deduction is taken from?
Very good. So the car is taken, the loan is taken out, and then you are left with something meager. Mm. So after that, if you succeed in coming back to parliament, you are a lucky man. If you are not successful, then how do you survive it?
We'll come back to deal with the issues going forward. But let me ask, so in spite of all these challenges, the difficult road that you have to travel to become an MP, it is absolutely a very competitive area in our body politics. People are desirous to go.
Yes.
Over the weekend, we saw a huge lineup of people wanting to represent the Ejusu constituents. Nine of them, eventually one person won.
Yes.
But for the eight, it ended up, a wasteful exercise.
You see, if you are outside, there are some people who think that, well, getting to parliament, one is self-actualization. Mm-hmm. And then maybe two is a springboard to get into another position. And so there are so many things that, will get people excited about going to parliament. The other thing is that you see the MP cruising in a Land Cruiser, and you think that all is rosy. You will never believe that the person is sweating.
In the Land Cruiser.
In the Land Cruiser. Mm. So when they tell you don't come, or be careful, nobody will tell you be careful and you list it.
But you're paid well.
You're paid well. In fact, for now, I cannot tell you how much. Mm. I don't know how much MPs are currently paid.
The conditions of service for an MP is public knowledge.
Yes, but in our time, I don't think we were paid well. Because what we were paid was not able, you had to, it was mere management with your salary to be able to handle funerals, handle constituents, problems individually, and still be able to stay afloat.
But sometimes you get your constituents to understand the kind of pressure they are putting on you, very well, that you can't meet all their demands. To the extent I'm told that sometimes even people wanting to get married, they come to the MP for financial support.
Yes.
That.
Yes, I mean, you see, if you tell them that, look, things are hard, nobody believes you. And they will tell you that, well, we supported you, we toiled for you, okay, we shall see. And that is what is going to happen. You can't do anything about it. You cannot convince them that you are driving in a Land Cruiser, you come comfortable, and you are not emaciated, and then you don't have money. Nobody is going to believe that. And so you are forced to, and rightly so, there are some of them, you know, they worked well for you. And now you are there. The person has a problem of marriage. And maybe they are coming, like in my place, maybe they are coming for the wife because he has not been able to afford a cow to give to the in-laws. Now, what will you do?
It becomes a responsibility.
It becomes a moral obligation. And so you would be forced to maybe go and even contract a loan to give to the person to salvage the marriage. This is what MPs go through. And then after that, you go back. And they pay the public things that you have had so much of government money. And so you can't be paid pension.
So how are you paid your pension? How is it paid? I thought it was all consolidated. The S gratia, doesn't that represent it?
Well, the S gratia, as I'm saying, it is like a gratuity. That's the S gratia. It's like a gratuity. And in some in area of people covered under Article 71, a number of them get gratuity and they still go on pension. You see, the justices, they get gratuity, they get extra, but they are on pension. They retire on salary. Now, in our case, the Chinhazi Committee recommended that if you serve two terms, you should be paid 20% of a sitting MP's salary as pension for 20 years.
Okay.
Now, this thing was shut down by the Supreme Court because they said there are articles that must rhyme, and they were not rhyming. And so once they were not rhyming and spelling out pension very explicitly, then we are not entitled. But I remember I was privileged to be with the Consultative Assembly. And I remember somebody asked a question. We are talking about pension, but we are saying nothing about the MPs. And the committee on this said, no, we are saying something about pension. We are saying that it should be left to the Committee on Emoluments, the Presidential Committee on Emoluments. And so, in Article 71, the salary was defined to include pension.
Right. And what happened to it?
Now, when Children Health Committee recommended, based on that recommending for us to have pension, the Supreme Court said that was just a signpost and it didn't mean we should have pension. If you read through all the articles that concern retirement benefits, it should have been specific that MPs are entitled to pension. And so when it was not, once it's not specific, then it means MPs cannot take pension. And unfortunately, they misconstrued it to mean maybe we also wanted to be on salary, full salary.
Yes.
But it was just 20% of a sitting MP salary for you when you are able to do two terms.
And then that is paid to you as pension.
That should be your pension for 20 years. And after 20 years, if you are alive, you find your own level. That was the recommendation of Chinhazi.
Right.
And that has been denied too.
You've been denied this?
We have been denied this.
And you've left it like that?
What else can we do? I am happy that Parliament now is talking seriously about this. Mm. Because this year, the number of former members who have died is bad.
They have died because they were in
health
difficulties, financial difficulties,
yes.
After serving the country for years.
Yes, after serving the country for years, you are now aged. And this is time you have to visit hospital. This is time you have to be on. This is time you have to go for medical checkup. You can't do it because you have nothing. And so how do you go handling yourself?
Mr. Abassar, will you say that in terms of the arms of government, Parliament is the weakest?
I will not
In terms of the provision and the perks that comes with the office,
yes.
The executive arm of government, the judiciary and Parliament, you have to buy your own car to pay for it.
Parliament is the weakest.
For the service of the nation.
Very good. So Parliament is the weakest. Parliament is the least cared for. And I am happy because as Parliament is saying, they can go ahead to amend the articles that the Supreme Court says are making it illegal or unconstitutional for us to be paid pension. They should go and amend those articles and put it there that MPs are equally entitled to pension.
To pension.
Yes. Because I was in the Consultative Assembly, and I remember this. And that is why the salary is defined specifically in the Constitution to include pension. Nowhere in the English dictionary do you have salary defined as pension. No. But this is why they did that. So that if the committee comes and sees that the MP as he is, needs to be paid pension. And like General Hesse Committee, they rightly put it, the MP, somebody can come at an age about 30.
Right.
He works through and he goes about four terms. That's about 60 years.
Right.
Adding to his, and comes out.
Mm-hmm.
Where does he go to work to get a good pension? And so...
After leaving Parliament.
After leaving Parliament. So the best option is to give the person a package that can keep him up to 70 years. Because they said you must be 50 before you access the pension for MPs.
Mm-hmm.
And then you will only access it for 20 years. And so they were so moderate. But that too was rejected. And so as MPs are sitting down, certainly.
So there's no pension scheme whatsoever for.
It's just the SNIT.
Mm-hmm.
But the SNIT.
The usual contribution everyone does.
Yes, everyone.
There's nothing beyond the SNIT contribution.
Nothing beyond the SNIT contribution.
And you've kept quiet on this matter for all this while.
Look, when we're pursuing this, you see, we have difficulty. You have a difficulty galvanizing everybody to see that you need to fight this until it becomes a big problem and confronts people.
Right.
Uh-huh. So when we are doing this, I talked to a number of people. I talked to the Speaker of Parliament. I talked to MPs. I talked to former members. And then I talked to even people in government, former members in government. And I said, look, this issue, we got to handle it because it's serious.
We'll talk more about it. But let me bring in the first Deputy Speaker of Parliament, Honorable Joseph Osewusu, Member of Parliament for Bekwai. And he joins us via phone because the Zoom is acting up on us this afternoon. Honorable Joseph Osewusu, you're welcome to the Pulse.
Thank you very much.
It is good to hear. It's actually good to hear your voice. So you've been leaving Parliament after serving first as an independent member of Parliament and then on the ticket of the MPP, rising to the position of first Deputy Speaker of Parliament. I've heard you say on a number of occasions that, I mean, you may not even want to come back into public service. What makes you so sad about what you've done in your life, in the public space, as CEO of DVLA to Parliament, and now this reservation that you have?
Well, first, let me apologize extremely to you because I accepted to be at the studio. And I've been out of office for nearly 3 weeks, so I didn't know that I had so much power behind me and so many appointments. So it was almost impracticable for me to get there on time. That's why I thought I could use this room. So please forgive me
for
disappointing. But specifically, let me say that public service is very exacting emotionally. And if you mean well, then it is even worse because you give it all, your all. And frankly, let me say that the response of the everyday Ghanaian is so disappointing. You'll be called a thief. You'll be called any name. But when you have put in your very best, at the very least, you expect an acknowledgement. If you ask me, the worst thing that has happened to me is having so much faith in the public system such that I was hoping that the effort you put in will be acknowledged. But of course, we all are warned. When I recall when we first came to Parliament, we went to visit President Kufuor and he said, you will never be praised. You will be melt until you are empty. Then you are thrown away and they go for another person. I hadn't dreamt it this way. But I must say that what I find fulfilling is that I look back and say, this is where we started from at the time I joined Parliament or I joined public service. At the time I was leaving DVLA, I could say with pride that I joined DVLA at level A now, or I joined DVLA at level C. Now I can say that I'm at level B plus or A. That was sufficient to satisfy me, notwithstanding what other people said. Then I came to Parliament. I can say with pride that my constituency, I joined from level C, now I'm level A plus, B plus or A. And that gives me confidence. Notwithstanding that, it hurts to hear people call you a thief only because you opted to work for the public. Listen to all public discussions. Every politician, every elected official is called a thief. Nothing hurts me more than that. When I can say with pride, I've never asked for support from anybody. I've never asked for anybody to give me anything before I do my work. You know? So those are the things that I think. Now I have health issues, but I think those things may have contributed to my health issues, and so I want to leave the scene quietly and endure my pain in quiet.
So, Honorable, you live in Parliament or you live in public service for good?
Well, first thing is that Parliament have already announced that after 4 terms, I think I've put in enough. But I have no desire to return to public service as in being an office holder. My desire is to continue to be a good citizen. I actually have taken on some personal challenge. I hope I can mobilize people for us to work towards reorientation of the everyday Ghanaian. When we say somebody is a citizen of Ghana, what should we expect a person to do? His attitude to work, his commitment to the country, his integrity. Can we do something about what it is today? I've gotten some friends who share that, and we're trying to put up something. A small probably help if it becomes acceptable. Then we use as a basis for training right from the very basic level, preparing people's minds so that probably in 20 years, after I'm dead and gone, probably we'll have something to show that this is what you can expect an everyday Ghanaian of everyday Ghanaian. Of course, that's a private matter, and I'm interested in helping us reorganize the mindset. I think we have a lot of work to do in that area.
So in terms of addressing the challenge, from your own point of view, where do you think the problem is coming from? Is it misunderstanding, or is it a conduct of MPs that has pushed them in this arena where sometimes you are viewed as thieves, corrupt, or people who are simply about your own welfare instead of the people you represent in the House?
Frankly, if the true work of an MP is reported and not misrepresented, why would anybody call an MP a thief? Because you have no access to public funds. You don't spend public funds. You don't even authorize expenditure.
Mm.
Right? You have practically nothing to do apart from approving the budget in Parliament. What we call the MP's share of the common fund goes to the district assembly, and you can only authorize the MCE or the coordinating director to spend that money in this or that way. The MP takes no part in the procurement or the expenditure. But every day reportage, and here I bring you in, the media.
Right.
And so the recent one, the bloggers, every misconduct, they come back to the MP. If the road is not fixed, they ask, do you have an MP here? If the school roof goes off, do you have an MP here? Meanwhile, the people respond for collect revenue in the debt, in the consequence, and never mention. When it comes to our owner doesn't as everything I mean, we take our belief. So I've cited this proposal. You know, if you put in typical that is the deadliest building is a public building, either a school building or and the neatest one is a church. Doesn't it tell something about how and where how? So I think that first the myth of that, myth and faith of a role, and holding him responsible for what he is not assigned to, and we are present of accusing one another of feeling corrupt without, because he will speak to forgive us this guy. And this is our own, and then this man can make.
I think the connection, we are losing the connection. If you can kindly reposition yourself.
I hear you very clearly.
Yes, okay. So let me come back to another issue. In the studio here with me is the former member of parliament for Bogatanga, David Apasara. And he is taking me through some of the challenges that he faced whilst an MP to the extent that sometimes people want to get married and he has to now be the one to fund the acquisition of a cow for that marriage ceremony, because eventually it will come down to the MP to provide it. Failure upon which you will be labeled as somebody who is not concerned with the welfare of that particular constituent. You come from the Asante region, an urban area, if you like.
Yes, the choir is very open.
Exactly. I'm wondering whether you also had pockets of some of these unconventional requests that came your way.
Yes. Not in respect of asking for assistance for marriage in particular, but every other thing. And the dishonesty with which the people who are asking for support even reported. I'll give an example.
Okay.
In around August 2020, I woke up to see my house full of people.
Mm.
I opened the gate, they came in to sit down, and I listened to them one after the other. First elderly woman, oh, lawyer, I'm a widow. My husband died. Difficult for us, me and the kids, so I want to make kinky to sell. I have this, I have that. I need money to buy the big bone. Oh, how much would that cost? Quickly, mobilize money, give it to her. She goes, another person comes, the same thing. Then I observed that the stream of people that are coming, from the same locality was increasing. Until about after 2 hours, a taxi comes to stop there. The people, obviously from church, comes out of the taxi, come out of the taxi, and ask them, "Yeah, brings here. Oh, lawyer, We've heard that lawyer is in town and he's just
it's ceremony.
That is the kind of mindset with which people take money from BNP.
And if you don't provide,
represent. Sometimes they even lie about why they need the support. But they think that because you're an MP, you're responsible for that. In the last 2 years, I've bought tickets, I've credited, I've given my bank account to about 6 young people. Some after they've gotten their visa, they come to you, they don't have money to buy a ticket. I arrange for the ticket to be issued to them on credit, saying that, their visas include working, so within 6 months they'll pay. In fact, a particular one, the clearing agent came to me to demand his money because the person, after getting the visa and traveling to Canada, he has blocked the travel agent. So I have to pay it for it because I guaranteed that. So the demands differ. There are people who are also very grateful, and I'm very particular about supporting people who are doing work with their hands. I went around some workshops. I found a young girl who was a master auto spray. I was so impressed. What can I do for you? So if I get an electric one, we quickly arranged for that. She got it. The joy with which she came to thank you. You know, it's very motivational.
Right.
Others received it, and they said, "Oh, so what is this? We are giving out this. It is our own money."
The thinking is that you owe them a life. But I mean, going forward, and as somebody, you are now in leadership in Parliament. I put a question to David Apasara that it looks like the legislature is the weakest link in the arm of the government. The judiciary appears to have been taken care of. The executive the same. For the legislature, for an MP, even if you have to buy a vehicle, you have to pay for it and use that same vehicle for
to do public work.
Exactly, the service of the nation. And you have a huge constituency, 250 very vocal, 275 very vocal individuals. When come together, can effect any change that you want. So what really is the way forward? I'm getting to understand that there isn't even a pension scheme for members of parliament.
Well, first let me say that somehow people don't appear to understand the work of the member of parliament. And so it's not...
When we made our McDonald's spicy chicken McNuggets, you were praise hands emoji. Then we ran out and you were streaming tears emoji. Now they're back, so you can be grinning face with sweat emoji. Order ahead on the McDonald's app.
And get money mouth face emoji with 2 orders of crispy, irresistible 10-piece McNuggets, spicy or classic, for just $6. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hello, Saver. Whether you're saving for that trip to the tropics or saving for an emergency, now is the time to take advantage of Wells Fargo's savings options. Wells Fargo offers savings accounts that can help you save towards your goals. So, what are you saving for? Visit a Wells Fargo branch or wellsfargo.com/save to open a savings account today.
Wells Fargo Bank N.A. Member FDIC.
One of the agencies they consider as critical. And the reason may be that from our political history, whenever there is an intervention by the military, it is that arm of government that is dissolved. Parliament is dissolved. The executive stays in one form or another. The judiciary stays in its own form. There was an attempt to change it by introducing, what do you call them, first people's court and later tribunals and things. But the legal system is so strong that it has retained its its form, and it continued to exercise its own powers. Mm. But when it comes to the legislature, first, the membership of the legislature is very fluid. People come in one term, they leave, some two terms, some three terms. The longest one has been Radon Abubabi.
Right.
After that, then it comes to...
Yes, and
then I come to Colin Zauda, Zebila. Zebila has been in and out a couple of times.
Kennedy Japan. Yes.
Kennedy Japan. You know, then you move on to Esiama and others, then you come to our group. Even these who have served the institution for a long time are the ones who are often very vilified. They are given names. You know.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making here is that every year after election, you lose about 40 to 50% of all the members. New people come in. It takes time for them to find their feet, to understand. And then we tend to look to the executive and say what we require to do our work is a favor. You know, so even standing together to demand and insist on what we want is difficult. Because some of you are already ministers, and therefore they can't speak to the executive. They ought to be a part of the executive. Some want to be ministers, so they want to join the executive, and therefore their independence is compromised. And so, it cuts across both sides.
So the constitution is an issue here?
Well, to a large extent, yes. But it ought not to be. Because what I observed also is that every member of parliament who is a minister prefers to maintain his conditions of service as a member of parliament first.
Yes.
If there's any other thing, it's a top-up. You know, so it ought not to be that you're afraid of the executive because you have your backbone as a member of parliament.
Mm.
And if we're working together to protect our interests, it shouldn't be that difficult. Yeah, but we must accept that generally conditions of service for everyone in the country is not that good. So it's difficult to insist on some things which are not given to other members of the public.
Mm.
But it is also unfair to expect members of parliament to operate from two locations, operate in Accra and operate at Bekwai.
Mm.
Moving between these two places, and when you get to Bekwai, for example, I have 116 towns and villages. That forms the required constituency.
Mm.
And so move within that 115 towns and villages as well. And yet, you're not expected to have official state-provided vehicle. The MCE who is operating at location only, let's say the required MCE, who moves only between the 116 towns and villages if he wishes to, is provided official vehicle, official driver, everything the assembly provides it for him. And the MP who must go back and forth, take the things from here and join here, is not entitled to any of those of the privileges or conditions of service available to them and MC. Even though in terms of salary, the MP salary is higher than the DC or MC. The DCMC also has facilities which are not available to the MP and makes it incomparable, you know. But I must say that, for example, just like the honorable minister, the worst part is that whatever you get as an MP, you share with the whole community.
Quite clearly.
You share with the whole community. The only thing you may not share are your wife and children.
Mm.
Every other thing you have, you share. The church wants you to be part of the harvest every time. Every school activity, you have to be there. The districts, if the fire service department has a problem, they come to you. If the municipal health authority has a problem, they come to you. everybody takes a small bite of the little that comes to you.
Elsewhere, if you don't have, you have to borrow and then satisfy that need.
Unfortunately, we do all the time. Indeed, there's a community in my constituency, they gave me pressure, actually credited 10 packets of ration fees for them because my common fund is not there, not available, and there's an emergency in their constituency. So I have to go and buy it. Sometimes, I'll take it back when the fund comes, but by the time the fund comes, you wouldn't even remember because the procurement process is required. If the money won't come to you, it will go to the supplier. If you're lucky, you'll get your money back. So the challenges are real. But above all, for me, it is the lack of appreciation and the disrespect members of parliament get that really kills me.
All right, thank you very much. Honorable Joseph Osewu, who first Deputy Speaker of Parliament, for sharing your thoughts with us on this very important subject. This is the pause here on Joy News. Let me also bring in Maxwell Lukuto. Honorable Joseph Osewitu is leaving Parliament. David Apasara left already, but someone is coming in, Maxwell Lukuto, and he joins us via Zoom. Maxwell, you welcome to the
Thank you, good afternoon, and good afternoon to our viewers.
Right, so you've heard the first Deputy Speaker of Parliament, the challenges that he's gone through. You've also listened to David Avasara, who was also a member of Parliament and now no longer a member of Parliament. After listening to them, do you think that you are walking into a situation which may not be so nice?
Yeah, seriously, listening to them will make you have a second thought of exactly what the situation is going to be. This is not the first time I contested to become a member of parliament. I have done that on a few occasions, and I've had the benefit of talking to some former members of parliament. And throughout my life, I have been at the front to serve people. It's always been a joy to want to contribute to nation building. And so I have not found myself in any regular structured service like the civil service or the public service. It's all been private business. After investing, I decided to set up my own business to run, and out of which I have helped several people along the way where I am. I have not had the privilege of going for help.
Okay.
To rely on all along, and so it wouldn't be anything too different from what I've been doing for the long time having my people. And so, challenging as it may be, I think that I'm mentally prepared to go through this. I am a person who takes up challenges and want to succeed in everything I do as a challenge.
All right.
And so, yes, it looks gloomy when you listen to CS. For them to expound the situation they are in, those who left, what is it?
Well, so we have lost him. We'll bring him back so that we can continue and to find out whether even before the roll call is done, he's already facing demands in the South Town constituency. Where he is the NDC parliamentary candidate for the December 7th general elections. But let me come back to the studio, and Mr. Adipisa Vasara is here. Clearly, what you are saying, you told us, fits right into what you've been telling us all afternoon.
Yes, certainly. it is, understanding that people will fail to appreciate that, yes, as an MP, doesn't mean you have all the money and you have to do it. Certain times, too, I look at it, it's because people are very vulnerable. If you are coming from an urban setting, it's a bit better. If you are coming from a rural setting, the difficulty is very bad. But people find it difficult to make ends meet. So they certainly have no other person they can get to other than the MP they voted for.
But Mr. Bosawa, doesn't this open the conversation or the discussion about you who find yourself in privileged position, like an MP, Minister of State, President, whatever? Your job is to ensure that the environment is conducive such that people can prosper on their own. And that ultimately reduces the pressure they bring on you. Isn't that the ultimate call?
That's the ultimate call.
Exactly.
But as an MP, how you can do this is very limited.
Mm.
You see, like the Honorable Osei was saying, he had to give some support to people to do and to, you know, enhance their businesses. Fine. But how many of the people can you do that to help? And, you know, you look at it, the population of a constituency, thousands and thousands of people. So you will try to do it, but you really you can't just simply have government policy concentrating in your place. Certain times you are even lucky to have it affecting your constituency.
I'll come back to ask you whether it's easier when your party is in power and more difficult when the party is out of power. But let me bring in again Marcel Lukuto, the NDC's candidate for Southern. Let me wrap with him, and then I can come to the studio to wrap up this conversation. So, Marcel, I just want to find out, even before you take your seat in the Nine Parliament, are you already meeting demands of your constituents already? Because knowing very well that with you as the NDC's candidate for Southern, I am absolutely certain that you are the next member of Parliament for the constituency come 2025. And if you can unmute for me. Yes.
On several occasions, even now becoming a parliamentary candidate. As an ordinary candidate or an aspirant, you meet these things along the way. Even before you get to the primary, these challenges will come. This morning, if I tell you the number of people that I have met who have come to ask for one favor or the other, you will be surprised, but it is on a daily basis.
Mm.
Some call you, some even just send you text messages or WhatsApp messages and expect that you remit them with some money. Somebody called this morning to say that there was a funeral, they wanted to bury the person this weekend. She said no, they should postpone it for a month. And now she's coming to me to take the money to go and pay for the mortgage she's carrying on. So,
and this is also your responsibility.
Yeah, so the demands are numerous and they are always there. But like I'm saying, some of us take up these challenges as a personal thing. We want to experience what it is like, want to succeed in everything we do, want to push ourselves and make sure that we bring something out of ourselves. It may not necessarily only be about the monetary gains to become a member of parliament. Honorable said that some of them are like self-actualization. I have been able to make it to this level.
Right.
This is what I've been able to do for my constituents. Some of us enjoy people coming back to say that had it not been you helping me to do this or that, I wouldn't have been who I am today. And so, like I said earlier, in my private business, whatever I gain as a person, I still spend on people to make sure that they used to be. And so that gives me some satisfaction. And I feel that becoming a member of parliament places you at a more advantageous position for you to bring some more benefits to the people. And then if you don't get the financial benefit, you get the satisfaction that you have been able to help somebody to get to where he is. And so beyond the financial and monetary gain and the pressure and the stress that will come on you, some of us feel that we are meant to serve society, and so whichever way it comes, we'll be ready to serve and offer our best to them. It's scary when you hear from them, and sometimes you think like, thinking otherwise, should I withdraw from this? This is what I'm going to lead. But the reality is that it is there. And so we are well ready, prepared mentally, physically, and spiritually for any challenge that will come our way. And we pray and hope that God himself will use us to be a benefit to the number of people who are looking up to us. For some of us, it's a mentoring process to tell somebody that this is what I want to achieve in life and I'll be able to achieve, so that in his diverse field of expertise or career, he can only also fight to become the best out of the situation. And so, for me, yes, it may not be only the financial gain that we'll be looking out for, but the help I'll interesting things that you ask yourself, why are people there with all the strength, they still want to continue?
Exactly. So that's a question. That is the question. Yes. Despite all these things, you know, in front of you, the competition to even win the seat comes with its own dynamics. Yet, you fight your way through to get it. Sometimes you spend millions of Ghana cedis to get it. Knowing very well that the return may not even match up to how much you put in. Yet, you go for it.
So that's the question you want to ask sometimes. And some after losing it, they behave as if the whole world has cashed on them. So you ask yourself, what is it there that they have lost so much that they want to die themselves? So we do have...
Right. Again... this afternoon the connection is not a very good friend this afternoon. So I guess we'll leave it here with Maxwell Lutuko. He is the NDC parliamentary candidate for South Dai in the Volta region. Let me quickly pick some the talks of Derek Odjuo, the former member of parliament from Kuranza North. He was a former deputy minister for defense. He was in parliament for a while and then lost the primaries. Honorable Drew, you're welcome to the pause.
Yeah, thank you very much. I get that, Bobby.
Yes. And let me ask you, your time in parliament, was this exciting, or you left parliament broke?
Both. I was in parliament for 4 consecutive times.
Right.
From 19, because I came through by election.
Yes.
And then left the place after 410.
Right.
2020, that I lost my election. And it was exciting because when I went there first, it was a new ground for me. I came from the military, and initially I thought people could go by timing. So 30 minutes to the commencement of a public preliminary session, then I'll be there. Just to see that I'll be alone.
Right.
And then sometime I got to know that the situation is that, you have to delay for a while. So the press, the media people named me KLM, first in the air, because I was always in the chamber before my colleagues would come. Because of my background as a military, and I wanted things to go, by timing, as set up by the parliament. Later on, I got mixed up and then got to know my level, and then decided to study the ground and saw that, yes, this is the way to go about your responsibilities in parliament. I enjoy it, really I enjoy it, because I used my military experience, military discipline, and went through. When I went there, I was put in the Defense and Interior Committee, among others.
Other committee. But was it worth it? Was it worth it?
Defense and Interior Committee. But because I was a former military officer, things were very, very easy for me. And each time there was any talk about security, any security issue in parliament, when I get up to talk, everybody sits down. They say, "Oh, Major, go ahead, because you are the man from the military.
From the military.
Security is your baby, so talk." And I enjoy that one. Each time there was any presentation, any statement to be made on security, I did it.
So
my background was military.
Right, so in terms of...
enjoy living in the parliament. But as to the technique...
Exactly. The demands that came on you, was it worth it?
Yeah, as me, it was worth it, because I decided to serve my people from the very onset. As a military officer, my responsibility was to serve my people. So when I went to continue as a deputy, as a member of parliament, I realized that I was still at home. So I didn't feel anything. But the situation is such that if you are going to parliament, if you want to become a member of parliament, then you are not on your feet. You will not enjoy.
What do you mean by being on your feet?
Quite different from when you are a military officer. Military officer, you go on holidays, you go to your hometown, nobody comes to you, but give me maybe helping hand. I want this, I want that. Pay my school fees, my hospital bills, my wedding engagement, I'm going, what assistance do you have for me?
Mm.
All this is when I was in the military, I was not experiencing this. But when I became a member of parliament, people thought that, yes, really, they voted for you, and you are to come and assist them by way of living, young welfare and things. So the ground was quite different for me. But I bet you, my brother Robbie, if you are not on your feet, you have not work to do, you don't have any other source of income, you cannot be a member of parliament, because you are people who would require you to assist them financially and any other assistance that they may need from you, which may even require money. So you need to support them. And if you don't have it, you depend on only your income from parliament, you'll be found wanting. You'll be found wanting. And therefore, you will have to have another source of income. I didn't have any problem because I was a big hand farmer. I'm now currently speaking with you from my farm plantation.
Mm.
I have a very big mango farm, citrus farm, I plant these, all sort of crops.
So, I
didn't have any problem when I was a member of parliament. Therefore, if you don't have anything to support your constituency would require you to try as much as possible, whether you have it or not, that is what they look at. Help them because they voted for you. And therefore, if you cannot do that, I bet you, second term, you will not go. But they will say you are not helping them. Another issue is that you are not to construct roads, you are not to do any development projects. But except the few ones that you can do with your income, your common fund.
And the rest. But you make promises to them that when I come, I'll do this, I'll do that. So when they make their demands, they are right in action. That you deliver.
Maybe because I didn't know the ground, so I didn't make any promise. Because I knew very well that before I went to parliament, I was enlightened. I was a military officer major, and I knew what I was about. So I knew it wasn't the member of parliament who would come and construct your rules. It is the responsibility of the government. Whether your government is in power or your government is not in power, you're supposed to go about lobbying,
right,
trying to see how you talk in parliament. You ask questions, parliamentary questions, to the minister for them to come and assist you in all sectors,
right,
Agri, education, everywhere. That is your responsibility. But there are other friends, other colleagues who didn't know the ground before they came in. They were making huge promise. And therefore, it's just like the original thing. The whole problem came to every member of parliament. Oh, you went to parliament, you made promise. How can you say you are coming to construct rules? Maybe you say they elect you as a member of parliament, they vote for you, and they vote for your government. Then you would ensure that maybe your government comes to construct the road, comes to provide other infrastructure for the community or for the constituency. But to say you will come and do it, it's a big blow.
Okay.
I didn't make any promise, and they knew I didn't make any promise. Because I came to take over from somebody through by election, and I knew what the guy was doing. Because he knew what somehow what to do, and he was about supporting with money, giving them money. So when I came, I told them that, yes, somebody was fishing for you. I have come. And I want to come and teach you how to fish. Still, they call me by that name, teaching them how to fish. Because I will let you know how to live, how to go about your living, so that you can earn your living. And therefore, people knew me from the very onset that, oh yeah, Major, this is how he goes about his
thing.
But it's true. Other colleagues faced difficulties because they made promises. Because their campaign team, if they didn't make, their campaign team made promises unknowingly. They didn't know what they were saying. Some will even go to where they don't have any river, no lake. But they go and promise Abomoto. Without knowing that there's no river in that community. So when they ask you, oh, how are we going to use the Abomoto? Then they tell you to say that, oh, we'll come and construct a very big lake for you so that we'll bring you the Abomoto and you put it on it to fish. These are all things that people promised that they didn't know what they were saying. What so it's true. Mm-hmm. Other people promised and then they couldn't fulfill the promise because either the government was not their government or because the financial situation in the country, the general economic situation, the other projects couldn't get to them and therefore they were not able to make it.
All right. Thank you so much.
Charge them with that responsibility.
Thank you so much, Honorable former Member of Parliament from Kwanza North and former Deputy Defence Minister Derek Odo. He said he left Parliament. He already put in place his exit plan. So his farm was already there for him and he's living a very comfortable life. Mr. Pasara, the way forward?
Well, I think the way forward is for Parliament itself to accept itself and see how it can take care of its members when they leave Parliament.
Yeah, should there be a fund for former MPs?
Yeah, well,
for those who are having it tough.
Well, now you cannot talk about a fund. Where is it coming from? That is why I think that Parliament should try and make amendments to the Constitution to the effect that an MP is equally entitled to pension.
Exactly.
And then the MP, when he leaves, he has a pension. This issue about having maybe a company or whatever functioning.
Yeah, to.
I know a whole number of people who have come and their organizations have collapsed. I know some who had very good law firms. They've collapsed because at the time you are in the parliament, whatever is there,
you wouldn't have time.
You won't have time to manage it.
To do other things.
Yes,
that's very instructive.
So it is just for us to say yes, we can be the same, and if we have to say that people who are well established will only come to parliament, then parliament will not be that interesting. So certainly, what we need to do now is for Parliament to take a look at what the ruling or the judgment of the Supreme Court regarding pension for members of Parliament, what it is, and then how they can work around it so that at the end of the day, if somebody comes to serve his people,
he has to be
because, as he's saying rightly, we had the feeling to work for our people. Mm. And you have the happiness and the joy when people see you and say, oh, by virtue of this man's effort, I have gone through education, I've gone through this, I've gone through that. That one, it is what gives you the joy.
Mm.
But at the end of the day, you must also survive. You must also live. And like...
So you say that there are a lot more former MPs who are struggling.
I'm telling you, that one is a fact. If we pretend, we are pretending. And certainly, that is how the nature of the African...
The political parties, what can they do?
Political parties can do very little for you. The political parties, fortunately, well, a few of former members are appointed ministers and maybe chief executives and so on. Majority of them are not.
The recommendation is that if the constitution is amended where the president will no longer have to appoint more than 50% of his ministers for parliament, parliament will become stronger and they can advocate for their own welfare. That will be very good for them.
Well, I think that right now the parliament we have is a very strong parliament.
Okay.
And the parliament that we have, if they will look at it, they can do it.
They can do a lot of changes.
Yes. You see, why we made more than 50% of ministers coming from parliament, some people had served in governments. Mm. And they thought that they were not. The MP is the one who struggles, who works hard, who canvasses for vote for the party. Finally, the party comes to power, and the MP is marginalized.
Right.
Because you are there, and you know, it's not rosy.
Okay.
The minister is there enjoying, and the minister didn't participate in bringing the party to power.
Okay.
And so people thought that we have to make it such that if you struggle and come to parliament, you can still also benefit.
Zabasa, before I let you go, just two quick questions before I let you go. PNC, are you coming on the ticket?
Yes, certainly. We had difficulties in the court. We're struggling with leadership question. That has been answered now. The court has given a judgment, and I'm still the leader of the party, and my able national chairman, Honorable Moses Danuba, is still in office. And we are going to get together, organize ourselves, and then we move to have constituency elections, and then to regional elections, and then the National Congress to elect a flag bearer and national officers.
And you are going to contest the flag bearer position of the party?
Oh, certainly, certainly.
You're hoping to lead the PNC in the 2024 elections?
I'm hoping to lead the PNC to the next election.
There was issue about some Mason Lankwisa. Has it been resolved?
Oh, yes. All that has been resolved. I mean, some of them were...
They said you took it.
Yes, some of them were saying that it is a party vehicle. Well, the thing is, somebody offered me a vehicle to do the work. And
the person gave you as a gift?
Yes.
So it didn't belong to a party?
It didn't belong to a party.
When you left, you took the vehicle with you?
Well, I haven't left. I'm the leader of the party.
No,
I'm still working for the party. So I haven't left.
Mm.
Yes. So anybody saying David has taken a party vehicle, the question is, this is not the first time.
Mm.
We have had leadership. We have had flag bearers from day one, from 1992. And 1992 was Hillary Mann himself. But from 1996, people have been flag bearers.
Right.
And they have equally been given cars. And they have never given them. They don't, I mean, if you are no longer doing work for the party, that is different. I'm still doing the work. I'm still having to move to the grassroots and then organize. So what do I use to do that?
All right, Ms. Apasara, thank you very much. And we'll follow the timetable for the internal elections leading up to the National Congress, and then we'll see how that would unfold.
Yes, I'm very grateful. Let me seize the opportunity to say hi to my party members, and then all party sympathizers, and to assure them that the party is still on and that we will come forward.
David Abasara is a former member of parliament for Bogatanga and former flag bearer of the PNC, and you just heard it on the pause that he will be contesting again on the ticket of the PNC for election 2024. This is the pause here on Joy News. We'll take a short break. When we return, we have more for you.
Irritation. New Honey Cough. Class Coho Away. Manufactured and distributed by NS Chemist Limited. This advert is FDA approved.
Welcome back to the polls here on Joy News. Now let's move to some other stories. And elders of the Tema Traditional Council have vowed not to rest until they get justice for the two who lost their lives on Friday during the Plejo Festival. We'll hear from the youth spokesperson for the Tema Traditional Council, Henry Oying, shortly. But first, the Tema Traditional Council has hinted they will petition the president and other stakeholders to ensure justice is served for the two deceased. There's more in this report.
Two residents of Tema New Town, 38-year-old Christopher Amu and 22-year-old Joseph Ajay, lost their lives after a shooting incident during a procession as part of the Plejo Festival. Both the residents of Tema New Town and Ghana Navy has been at variance with the cause of death of the two, as three others continue to receive medical care at Tema General Hospital. The community has blamed Ghana Navy for the death. Ghana Navy has, however, denied any wrongdoing. To seek justice for the dead, the Traditional Council has performed right by crushing fresh eggs, pouring libation, and others to invoke the power of the gods. Tema Shipi and Stu Secretary of the Tema Traditional Council, Ni Amar Somponu II, explains that per their custom, it is important to perform the rites for the deceased.
We are testing the potency of our gods, whether they are alive or they are dead. That's all we are asking for. Similar things, not akin to this one, but not precisely as this. The way we see things, we test the potency of whether they are alive or they are also gone. The town was really located here, but we never lost our sovereignty as people of Tema. So we shall continue to test the potency of our gods until justice prevails. We don't have a mock car. We don't have AK-47. We don't have SMG. But we believe on our gods. We are invoking them to come to our aid.
Ni Amar Somponu says the community feels powerless and need the assistance of the gods to settle the matter.
It is no news that people lost their lives through our celebrations. It is no news. And it is as a result of people refusing to exercise their discretionary powers. Look, I'm saying that force is also always applied when common sense fails. The incident that happened yesterday could have been avoided if common sense had been applied. Because if people were in the possession, and you know, a car, you are driving your car, and you see a number of people in possession, what do? You wait, they pass, and you continue. But you don't drive through them. You've been carrying their displeasure, and they will react. That's exactly what happened yesterday. Then, because you don't have guns, you start shooting. We were celebrating our festival. Does it make sense? We are invoking our guns. They should come to our aid because we are powerless.
Meanwhile, Temanya Adewulomo, Numo Abodade Hamle II, says the incident has marred the festival. This is a bad omen, losing two lives. We do not accept coughs into the community during this period. So for the two persons to have died takes everything away from this beautiful celebration. We have performed right.
Fargo, the new virtual assistant from Wells Fargo, makes banking faster and easier. Like this.
Fargo, what's my checking account routing number?
And this.
Fargo, turn off my debit card.
And this.
Fargo, what did I spend on groceries last month?
And that's just the beginning. Do you Fargo? You can. In the Wells Fargo mobile app. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/getfargo.
Terms and conditions apply. Your mobile carrier's availability and message and data rates may apply. Wells Fargo Bank NA, member FDIC.
For the ghost to step in. New Town community awaits outcome of the rites performed. Kwame Yankesh reports for Joy News.
Well, we can now listen to the youth spokesperson of the Tema Traditional Council, Henry Oyinka, who says they will not rest until they get justice for the two victims. He spoke with Aisha Ibrahim on NewsX.
we have given the respect to the Ghana Police Service to probe this matter further for the Ghana Armed Forces to attest to the fact, yes, that they really shot into the crowd, and that is what resulted that. And at the end of it all, the affected families, the Tema Traditional Council, not necessarily a compensation, but I mean, the affected families must also feel that the military has regretted what they did, and they are trying to calm them rather than issuing communique with threats. Yesterday, the communique they issued, to be precise, at the latter part of the communique, they mentioned that anytime the youth try to come on board, they are going to respond in that accurate manner. On a more serious note, as a representative of the youth, we have met them severally. Even this morning, we have had another meeting with them. No youth in Tema will take the law into their whole hands, as in attacking them or kind of something. No, we are not going to do that. We are law-abiding citizens. And whatever happened that day, if we had wanted to retaliate, it would have been a different thing altogether. So, in fact, right this morning, we are going to petition the presidency. We are petitioning the interior minister. We are petitioning the defense ministry. And the Greater Accra Regional Minister designate, yesterday, he was there throughout the day. The mayor of Tema, being the message chairman, was also there. The member of parliament for the Tema East constituency was also there. And they are coming to consensus. They are building themselves up. And I know definitely they will find a lasting solution and justice to our bereaved brothers and the family.
Departments and agencies, international partners, members of the diplomatic corps, traditional authorities, policy think tanks, academia, and civil society organizations. This broad consultation will ensure that the policy reflects realities, enhances the image of Ghana internationally, and stands the test of time. I urge all stakeholders to maintain the spirit of collaboration during the implementation phase. Government is committed to allocating sufficient annual budgetary resources for the successful implementation of this policy. I encourage the board and management of the National Service Scheme to leverage strong partnerships with domestic and international stakeholders to ensure the policy's success. It is disheartening to hear reports that service personnel are often underutilized, with many relegated to peripheral tasks or left idle in offices and institutions. Government investment in the National Service Scheme is significant, and we expect a return on that investment. Therefore, measures will be put in place to regulate deployment processes and reinforce learning opportunities during national service. Ladies and gentlemen, I reaffirm the commitment I made at the launch of the 50th anniversary of the National Service Scheme to elevate the National Service Scheme to authority status. Very soon. This will empower the scheme to realize its mandate and help shape our country's critical mass for the future. In conclusion, I want to commend the Minister for Education, the Governing Board, and management of the National Service Scheme, especially the Executive Director, my very good friend and colleague, Osei Esibe Entri, for their dedicated leadership. I ask them to implement the following initiatives outlined in the National Service Policy with increased vigor. One, introduce pedagogy training in collaboration with Transforming Teaching, Education and Learning and the National Teaching Council to complement efforts to reduce the pupil-teacher ratio. Implement an MSME accounting and program to help formalize the informal sector. Form specialized partnerships to promote tourism in Ghana through the NSS MOTAG support program. Four, expand experimental agricultural programs for national service personnel under the Sekou Kumau Economic Enclave, with support from the Ministry of Finance under the Ghana Cares Obatampa Program and Agri-Impact Ghana. Five, implement a metric application system to improve efficiency and eliminate waste and redundancies. And sixthly, establish ICT hubs for training service personnel in IT solutions as trainers for communities in Ghana. These interventions will solidify the National Service Scheme's position as one of the best in the West African and African region for deploying service personnel. I urge all stakeholders to support the scheme in achieving its objectives. Let us embrace the new changes, focus, and face of the National Service Scheme. I'm confident that with the implementation of this new policy document, the National Service Scheme will play an even more vital role in shaping the future of our nation and empowering our youth to fulfill their potential. Accordingly, ladies and gentlemen, it is my singular honor and pleasure to declare the 10-year National Service Policy, National Service Policy document, duly launched. God bless our homeland Ghana and make her great and strong.
Right, so that's President Akufo-Addo at the launch of a policy direction or policy directive for the National Service Scheme for the next 10 years. And this is ongoing at the National Service Secretariat. Policy launch for the next 10 years to guide activities of the National Service Scheme. And we brought to life visuals from that launch. And of course, in subsequent bulletins, we'll have more time to exhaust what is contained in the policy launch for the next 10 years. That's going to be the governing, tool to guide activities for the National Service Secretariat. But that's our show for this afternoon. For more stories, log on to our website, myjoyonline.com. We have more stories there. We have more issues to discuss on Top Story News Now, and of course, Joy News Prime. My name is Elton Broby. LTS is up next on Joy News. Have a good evening.